this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, no base stats and jacks. I'm Tomorrow Rookie on the board. S&P futures down 1950. NASDAQ futures down 105.75. A little bit of a down morning here after a big up day yesterday. We have Coca-Cola come out with earnings. They claim that their sales are up. Sales easily top estimates as global demand rises. Who are these estimators? Who are these estimators? There's not a whole lot of people that do that anymore, but anyway, there's always estimates and there's always beating them. Maybe you let out your own estimates, then you beat them. That's easy enough to do. We have Professor Murphy.
Yes, sir, you do.
How are you doing, bud?
Not too bad, Tom. How about you?
All right, we're preparing for some snow tomorrow. Of course, it started out as 3 to 6. Now it's 6 to 10 or something, you know. You know what the...
Yeah, we're supposed to get a little bit of snow today, too, starting around 10, I guess.
Well, you remember the girls used to play, say, at Division Street long before there was AIDS, and people kind of were a little more, shall we say, frisky. Snow's a lot like sex. You don't know how long it's going to last or how many inches you're going to get.
Okay, Tom.
I don't know if you ever heard that one before, but I guess it makes some sense. I don't know. Ever see the movie About Last Night with Jim Belushi?
I think I did, yes.
That's exactly the way people behaved back there for like a small period of time, and then when AIDS showed up, then that didn't happen so much anymore. All of a sudden, everything was different, shall we say.
Yeah.
Interesting history because... Well, you remember when nobody really moved out of their house as a young person, you know, especially young ladies. Then all of a sudden, that started to happen. But there was only like one spot in Chicago where people really went. It was at Clark and Division area, and the reason for that was there was no. It was you remember before there was a blue line to the airport. There was no rapid transit, so all the ladies that were stewardesses essentially lived in that area because the bus ran from the. Tells the name of the hotel. It was the East and the West. One of them had the
Palmer Hotel.
No,
something?
Palmer. It started out at the Palmer House downtown. Then it stopped at where was the Pump Room? Was the Ambassador East and West? Remember those?
No, I have no idea, Tom.
Well, anyway, they stopped there, so it was right by in the neighborhood. But so what have you been up to? What'd you make of the Super Bowl? What'd you make of the college stuff? I haven't really talked to you.
Super Bowl. A friend of mine kind of, he predicted that Philly would do very well, and he was right. You know, I think, unfortunately, Kansas City was overrated this year. They didn't have the stats that they normally would have, and the Eagles did, and it showed in the game. So,
would you say the only team I thought maybe that matched up player for player with the Eagles, maybe, might have been the Ravens?
That's about what Gene and I thought, too. We thought that the Baltimore would have matched up better with them. But I just didn't see that they would put such a... they put a clamp hold on... what do you call it? On Mahomes with just the defensive line, and that really affected, I think, the game. Plus, Kansas City tried to... Well, they had geared up to stop Saquon Barkley, and the Eagles saw that and then, you know, started to use other things. So,
well, they did clamp on him pretty good, but the third down conversions, when they started doing those with the passes, I go, I think these guys are in trouble, and it started to happen.
Right, exactly. And then the Philly defense was just too good.
Yeah.
They just, I mean,
reminded me of the Bears when they were in the Super Bowl.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Pretty much. I mean, if you have, I mean, you and I have played enough sports where if you get to the point where, I mean, a lot of people who watch football don't necessarily do the math. I mean, you're just trying to watch the game. But if you're four guys can get to the quarterback with some sort of pressure, that leaves you seven other guys. That's a lot of people in coverage.
Right. Yeah, that's very true.
Hey, did you happen to watch the Irishmen and their another debacle on Saturday?
No, I did not. I saw the thread, and you know, I saw where John thought that the Irishmen were a little soft, and they just to me, they don't have much discipline. I saw them play at UVA, and they looked pretty good that day. But then against whoever it was they were playing last weekend, they, you know, I guess they didn't play very well.
Well, they have the same issue late in the game. Only one or two people want the ball. But the interesting part was, well, for me, I think, you know, I thought, I never saw who it was, but I think I recognized the voice. I think it was the LaFonso Wallace might have been doing the color.
And, was he doing it with Dick Vitale, or was Vitale called another
game? No, he was on, I actually watched that game. He called the Clemson-Duke game.
Right.
Which was a great game, by the way.
Did Duke win, or did
Clemson? No, Clemson won at the last minute.
Oh, wow. Good for them.
And then they lost to somebody else last night, though. I think they lost last night. I watched them play. But the interesting part was our friend Kevin and I have been going back and forth. You know, he's a little bit of a traditionalist, and I hope he's right, actually, whenever he is right. About, I think, Mike, if you and I are on the board of any one of these schools, we might have a very serious thought in terms of cutting costs of doing no recruiting whatsoever, just stealing everybody from somebody else.
Well, and that's why the UVA coach quit this year, Tom. He didn't like putting up with the nil. He doesn't like the style of basketball that's really being led and played by a lot of teams. You know, he doesn't like the whether it's one and done, or, you know, these guys moving every year. I mean, in college football, I've seen guys that they seem to move every year. So,
well, is that kind of style? I thought you could only move once or something, but
you can move more than that.
Well, what the fans was saying is that, you know, the Irish have this really young team, and I'm sure other people do too. And he was talking about how some of these kids are getting better, and they're being the guy's a pretty good coach, I guess, teaching stuff. He said, but they're getting better, but now they've got this recruiting class coming in. He goes, everybody is going to be all over the guys that are here, saying you're not going to play with these young guys showing up, and they're going to be all after them. He says, if you have this constant bringing people in that are good, you're always just going to, you can't build on them. You can't get any depth because everybody's going to get, because what's the point? You work, basically work your ass off for 2 years recruiting somebody and training them and teaching them. And if all of a sudden, you know, you get a hot shot freshman, all of a sudden the guy's phone lights up. And everybody says, you're not going to play. They'll come out over here. We're like, yeah. Mordo. And it almost gets become a zero-sum game, the recruiting part.
Well, that's kind of, it seems like it has been. I don't know whether in football it's kind of going that way, and in basketball it would seem that it would go that way quicker because there's fewer players. So who knows?
Well, you have to be, unless some teams are willing to pay as much for somebody to sit on the bench as another team to start. I don't know if that's happening. It would seem like there would be this. But, you know, the weird part of it, Mike, is this is the way pros should be. People should be able to go wherever they want.
Right, yeah. Well, and it's funny how, you know, Neil Ivey, the Notre Dame women's coach, he seems to be successful at this game. So, we'll, you know, it's amazing to me how that works out.
I don't think there's as much as people want to make things even, I don't think there's the money in women's basketball to where you're going to steal somebody and pay them. people, the girls are going to get their own stuff, which more power to them. I think I love that, but I don't think to get somebody to come from another school to Notre Dame, they're not going to. It'll be interesting to see how tight they all are.
I think she's done it with several players. She usually seems to have, like last year, she had the woman that was a fifth year player from she had been at like St. Joe's or something, and this year she brought in somebody. I forget who it is, but she does. I mean, she gets and develops her own players, and they stick around for her.
How much? Well, what did Kevin say Friday? Somebody, what's her name? The girl who was hurt, now she's back. The one who wears the glasses, Libby Miles.
Oh yeah, right.
She's got like five people. She got her own line of T-shirts. She's got this. She's got that. And I wonder how much the school's involved in that recruitment. I mean, they have nothing but staff. So if PTI Securities was like Merrill Lynch, in some ways we're better than Merrill Lynch, but we're not as big. If I wanted to sponsor one of the girls and have her on our website, I don't think I'd have a problem. I bet if I called up the athletic department, they'll put me in touch with her person. I bet they're right involved in it. How could they not be?
Well, I would. Well, who knows, Tom?
How would you and I get Hidalgo's phone number?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have no idea.
I suppose we could. Yeah, I'm sure she's on Facebook someplace, whatever. But still, it's. I mean, somehow or another, the schools have to be involved in this, don't you think? I mean, because they got all these people doing God knows what. I mean, does Olivia Miles? I'm happy for her, but how the hell does somebody supposed to be in school all day get five people that are all of a sudden sponsoring her? It's got to be like a full time job. It is for us to get sponsors.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey guys, thought I'd jump in on this because I can fill in some blanks for you.
All right, Kevin. Right. Good morning.
Right. Well, first of all, she does have an agency that represents her, so she doesn't have to do all that digging herself. That's Olivia Miles. You also notice that State Farm has some of the Notre Dame women on a commercial now as well. And probably front and center for that is Hannah Hidalgo. But Mike also mentioned bringing in players. You know, Kylie Watson, who's sitting out this year after tearing her ACL last year, but was the starting center on last year's team, did transfer in, and they have two fifth-year transfers on this year's team, both of whom were first-team all-conference. So Liza Carlin, who came over from Marquette, was first-team all-Big East, and she comes off the bench now for Notre Dame. Liatu King is a starter for the Irish, and she was first team all ACC at Pitt last year.
So
they do, you know, I mean, that's the people coming to play to be role players on this team after being the best players on their own team. And you know, it's fifth year in both cases, and they're there to because they think they can win a championship here. But the others on the team, you know, they have the core of the foundation of the team is the people who've been there all along. So, you know, Olivia Miles is her fourth season at Notre Dame. Sonia Citron, the same. Maddie Westbeld playing her fifth year at Notre Dame. I'm probably missing somebody here. You know, they have some other rotation players who are recruits from out of high school. So, you know, they're kind of doing the program both ways. They're recruiting, and then they're filling in the blanks with transfers rather than just living off transfers.
Well, what did you think of I think it was the Fonz on Saturday.
Think it was the Fonz. Tom Brenneman with somebody, and I'm trying to find who the see if I can find the announcing crew for that.
Well, whoever it was, what did you think of what he said?
Well, I generally don't listen much to what they say when I'm watching a game. I mean, it's amazing how much I tune out and how much, you know, how much I actually hear. But I think for the most part, they're misinformed. But I think that what I just described for the women's team is the model you have to pursue. You've got to have some core players, even if they're not your best players. I think you better have a core of players who understand the system, understand, you know, you have to build a culture around a team. And if you because I'm a season ticket holder, I get to observe it. My seats are right by the Notre Dame bench. I get to see that they're supportive of each other, that they really enjoy each other as well as they play well together. And those are the kinds of things that make a huge difference on a team. So, you know, I think it's hard to do that when you turn over every year. And I personally...
For whatever reason, though, Kevin, the women's teams are this... All of them seem to... the top 10 teams. All the coaches, I mean, the guy from Connecticut, even though I'm not a big fan. Sort of the same thing. The women's teams are sort of together. Whatever the difference is, maybe because... Maybe you need more teamwork. I don't know if that's the right statement. But I don't think the guys give a crap that much. You know, there's so many good teams that if somebody's going to Virginia and somebody offers them more money in Maryland, he just goes. It seems like...
I don't know. I interviewed a lot of men's basketball players over the years, and I got a lot of, you know, these guys are my brothers. They're my lifelong friends.
For the year?
No, forever.
Okay. Well,
it was a different time when they didn't have as much transferring going on because you had to sit out the year and all of that. But I think there was culture building, and I think that wins. You know, who's an example from before the NIL and transfer without a break days? Kentucky, and Kentucky always had the best players, but they had a team full of one and dones. And the best team that I remember them having was when guys actually came back. Because I don't think you can turn over any team in any business, let alone basketball, constantly and expect to be a high-performing group.
Well,
it just doesn't happen.
I think that those guys their one and dones were going to their pros. That's how good they were, some of them.
Well, yeah, they absolutely were good, and they're still in the NBA. You know, they still have lots of guys in the NBA, and you don't even remember that they're from Kentucky because it was so fleeting. Not the point I'm making, though. The point I'm making is that they kept turning over the team, and they really, you know, you needed to be able to get, I'm trying to remember a couple of the names that stuck around. That was the team that beat Notre Dame to go to the Final Four. That was his best team. They still didn't win it all. I think Wisconsin won it all that year, but... But the point is they were a better team, where the other ones, Calipari used to get criticized for underachieving with all the talent he had, and I think that's because there is more to it than just talent.
Well, there's a difference. You bring somebody in as a freshman, first, if he's going to start right away, he's still a freshman. He's probably a pain in the ass. And that guy, his team's, the difference between them in December and March were kind of a tribute to his coaching, I thought. I mean, he actually put the team together, but they never...
I think so. They didn't do a lot of complicated stuff, but if you caught them in December, they were just no continuity. They could be a mess. And then if you caught them in at the end of February and into March, that, you know, they were doing stuff. They were working as a team. They didn't do anything sophisticated. They were running really basic offenses and standard defenses, and letting their talent win the day. So, I think in that respect, Calipari, that was kind of his genius as a coach. But you know what? He's not at Kentucky anymore because they got tired of not winning the championship with all that talent.
Well, there's what, 50 teams tired of not winning the championship?
I understand that, but Kentucky is not just one of the 50.
That's true. They think they are a little step above. And sort of always have been, I mean, to a certain extent. Anyway, the guy's point was, if you get this great recruiting class, it's just going to cost you upper class because the phone's ringing already. Hey, that guy's got your spot next year. That's why they're bringing him in.
So, you know, I think there's a certain amount of truth to that, but I once again, I think that's always been true to some extent, that you always had guys, and nobody likes having someone recruited over you. They don't, and so we... over the years, quarterback is is the position where that has always been most likely to happen, because, you know, if nothing else, you recruit a basketball player, there's plenty of room in the playing rotation for, you know, to go eight or nine deep, no problem. Everybody can play. Everybody can have an important role. Everybody will get their chances to shine. If you're talking about a quarterback, sorry, only one guy is going to play. Everybody else is going to watch. So if that's not okay with you, especially if it's not okay with you for the next several years, then you're going to go find a place where you can start. And we've seen great quarterbacks do that. You know, we've seen Joe Burrow. We saw
Jalen Hurts moved around a lot.
Jalen Hurts, yeah, because he was at Alabama and Tua came in.
How do you think the guy at Green Bay feels with Aaron Rodgers saying he wants to finish his career in Green Bay?
Oh, good for him. Yeah, sign him for a one day and then let him retire.
Exactly. I don't think he's better than the other guy anymore, do you?
Aaron Rodgers is over the hill at this point.
Is he done? I mean, is his contract there done, or is he got another year?
I think he's got another year. I think they're going to eat it, though.
Yeah, he's a... depends on who else you get. I mean...
They did pick up Devontae Adams to play with them, but who knows? They won't... unfortunately for the Jets, they're like the Browns now. They just can't ever put it together.
Yeah, tell me about it. All right, guys, I'm gonna drop out and leave you back to it. I just wanted, when you were talking about the Notre Dame women's team, I do know a lot more about that, and so I wanted to give you some flavor for it.
The Mike, what do you make of all the stuff that's going on in Washington and the and everybody seemingly cheering the fact that everybody's getting fired?
He's a disruptor, and that's what he's doing. And he's just showing how active he can be. The comparison with the former administration, unfortunately for America, we were lied to for 4 years, and now we're, at least Trump said he was going to do stuff, and now he's doing it. So we'll see what happens.
I don't really want to talk about the things that are troubling me, but the idea of a democracy, the way we're set up, I mean, everybody likes the idea of, the TV show You're Fired type of thing. Because nobody else in the world does anything at their job, and they're all overpaid, especially if you're paying them, right? I mean, it's people's, for whatever reason, people feel that way. This Bureau, these consumer protection agencies, is somewhat of a interesting thing to me, but I actually wanted to talk to you more about the military piece. But the consumer protection, I don't think you were listening to the show 12 years ago, but when they first, or whenever those things, guys were put together, it was kind of a child of Elizabeth Warren to a huge extent. And there was a lot of weird stuff was going on in the banking industry. All the stuff with the Wells. Who were the guys that had signed everybody up for all the different accounts? They didn't know they even were signed up. Wells Fargo and somebody else. Bank of America did some stuff. Everybody was involved in some crap, basically. And it was pretty obvious that the Fed, who's supposed to be in charge of, I think, God, remember from our school days, Mike. The comptroller of the currency is supposed to be in charge of the major money center banks, right? Federal Reserve is in charge of the national banks, and the FDIC is in charge of the state banks, right? Isn't that the way that works?
Tom, I don't know.
But somebody's in charge of every, somebody's got somebody in charge. Everybody's got somebody in charge of them, allegedly. So it was obvious they weren't doing it. So instead of holding their feet to the fire and say, friggin' do it, they create a new agency, a duplicative sort of agency, which I was pretty much against from the get-go. Because, it's 12, 15, it's a lot of people, building, desks, their own human resources, whatever you got to do to have a whole agency. And I didn't think that was, that's the way government ought to work. If some people aren't doing their job, you just have other people do it and leave the other people there. I mean, you and I think would probably agree that that's not the way to go. But by and large, over a period of time, these guys did find out some stuff banks were doing. How efficient they were, I don't know. But the idea that you would come in and just vilify, none of these people do anything, they're all fired, blah, 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 like the TV show. It's sort of not my style. I mean the idea of the grumpiest thing, how's that for a term? The grumpiest thing about a democracy is it moves too slow in a lot of people's minds. But the reason why it's designed that way is because it's supposed to move slow. You're supposed to.
Well, that's true, Tom. But it's really unfortunate that Congress is I mean, the legislative part of the government is really, at this point, it's kind of worthless. There's a lot of people collecting a lot of money who aren't really doing too much. And, you know, Trump obviously believes in a strong executive, and that's what he's implementing. So, you know, and with Biden, we didn't have a strong executive, and it kind of showed. So,
there's a lot of stuff that that group accomplished, but nobody's going to give him any credit. I mean, I was no Biden fan, but there's a lot of the stuff that on both borders, those agreements were signed with the Biden administration months ago. Trump basically just took credit for them. I mean, on the military side, which I wanted to ask you about, the kind of denutting of Iran, mostly by the Israelis, which us giving them all kinds of weapons, Iran is a shadow of what they were 2 years ago. In my opinion, I wanted to ask you yours. Well, somebody did that, or at least it happened on their watch.
No, the Israelis did that. Okay, for the most part, you're right.
But we were with them the whole way, weren't we?
Yes, we were. The U.S. was with them in a guarded fashion. Yes.
But I mean, we gave them. We sold them every bullet they used, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we probably did. You're probably right about that.
So I'm saying I'm no fan of the other guys, but let's put it this way. There's a difference between Congress not doing their job and calling them out to do their job and just saying, well, that's okay, I'll take over. And I don't like slot B there, because that's not
right. But the problem is, we need an active Congress to provide the checks and balances necessary on the executive authority. And you can't just use the judicial system to provide the checks and balances on the executive. I think Congress has to do their job also. For instance, you know, what really slays me is you've had these omnibus bills have passed, you know, like the past 4 or 5 years, where, you know, nothing happens, and then at the last minute, you know, they go up against the debt authority and they pass the omnibus bill, and nobody has any time to read it, and then they throw in all the junk in the omnibus bill, and somehow it manages to get passed. So,
well, you have an issue that all the bills that they've passed, the major bills they've passed in the last two presidencies, and if you know, I would say that in one man's opinion, and I'm going to get some heat for this, the last 8 years of presidencies, the Trump-Biden slash, to me is the worst I've ever seen in my lifetime, and it's a combination of the two of them. One guy put in a tax decrease and essentially gave everybody a bunch of numbers. None of the numbers were any good. And the other guy put in, you know, all these other bills where he's spending money saying, oh, don't worry, it's going to be accretive because people are going to do so much better, the tax receipts are going to go up. Well, they haven't. So both people put through a total piece of fossil horseshit bill telling everybody that this was going to be accretive, and neither one of them is. So every time you come up with a funding bill, you go, wait a minute, we're spending way more than we thought we were going to. Now we got a problem. Isn't that what's happening?
Yes, that is what's happening. That's correct. And that's why I want to see what Congress ends up doing. You know, Trump keeps talking about one big, beautiful bill, and Congress wants two or three bills. Well, let's pass one bill. Let's pass a budget, you know, in a timely fashion and see what happens.
Well, you're not going to see, in one man's opinion, you're not going to see him, I mean, I would hope that it was you and me, having respect for our Constitution, which I don't think he has any respect for. I don't think he knows what it is. Well, that's probably a little too strong, but I mean, I would like us to say, here's 10 things you guys better get on. What about patent laws as it comes to drugs? What about the stuff that you know, all these hospitals, this combination of hospitals are doing? What about this? I mean, I think we could name 10 things that Congress could be doing the next 2 years and working full time. And yet, I don't see any challenge like that. All this, I mean, I think people on the show, I think, realize that the biggest hole in the budget is not the Consumer Protection Agency, it's the medical part. The incredible amount of combinations, the incredible amount of money people are spending for drugs that are a thousand times more than the people are cost to make, and yet there hasn't been one whiff, one hint of what he's going to do there, is there?
No, I mean, he gave a hint in the, a little bit of a hint in the Bret Baier interview that he did. I don't know if you watched any of that, but he has said that he's going to go after drug prices. I mean, because he's made the suggestion to several states' governors that they just ought to go to Canada to buy drugs and then just bring them back to their individual home states. So he, it's on his mind. I think he sees some of this other stuff as I think he wants to let Musk in to kind of do his house cleaning a little bit, work on transparency, and then attack the bigger problems. You know,
well, I think
because the Pentagon is pretty much is in his sights at this point. They're going to go after the Pentagon, and that's there's a lot of bloat there. Believe me.
Well, there's a how much? I mean, there's always going to be some. I mean, we're talking about any company. How much bloat do you think there is in your electric companies, your gas companies, because they're monopolies? Whenever there's no competition, there's bloat, right?
Yeah, that's true. And you know, I want to see what happens with the Pentagon. We'll see what, and then I think he's going to go after both Medicare and Medicaid. And I think that there's, you know, fraud, waste, and abuse in both of those systems.
Yeah, but Ricky, do we have a Joel?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, good morning.
Mike, can you hang for 10 minutes?
And then, sure, Tom.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. Doing well, Chief.
What do you make of the market? What do you make of the interest rates? What do you think we're doing here?
What do I think? I think we're all sitting on pins and needles waiting for House testimony at 10 a.m., three other Fed speakers today, CPI on Wednesday, and PPI on Thursday.
I've, for the first time, I've seen, you know, I watch these daily volatilities a lot, and for the first time, normally I'm itching to do a spread where you'll buy something, call or put, whatever it is, a couple days after the CPI and sell the day of it because there's a huge volatility skew. This week there isn't. It's almost like it's a non-event.
No, I noticed that. Things are calming down. And if you look at it, okay, from the perspective of the intraday trading, really tightening up here.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had some big overnight moves the following, you know, really the last three Mondays. We reached levels that you never saw during the regular session, and then it's just a lot of chop. I just say from an overall perspective with everything that's going on, and if you've been in the market for as long as I have and probably many of your listeners, I mean, we're at all-time highs. I mean, we are at, I mean, I know there's some stocks that people own that they're like, hey, I own four. That's not an all-time high. But I'm just saying on a relative basis, the way the Mag 7 has disappointed, except for Meta, it's, you know, in the deep seek and the China and the tariffs and taking over Canada and the Gulf of America, not to mention taking over Gaza. I mean, and yeah, redoing that. I mean, all these things that are going on, and this market is at basically 6,100. I mean, to me, If these things haven't killed the market over the last couple of weeks, month, I don't know what's going to.
I don't think, as you know, I'm not a closet monetarist. I am a monetarist. As long as the Fed starts pouring money back in like they're doing, market's going to keep going up. We're entering another inflationary period. They are putting roughly 6% a year money supply growth on an economy that's growing 1 or 2. So your inflation is going to be 5. I mean, the math is right there. And yet, and the money continues to go into the market. I mean, some of these stocks, I did some earnings plays last couple of weeks, and we, you know, sometimes we get real hot, sometimes we aren't. And I had probably 3 stocks that were 2 and 3 times straddles to the upside, where we add, like, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars to a company, like, overnight, without even the, I mean, it's absolutely bizarre I mean, money doesn't mean anything for certain people anymore. Joel, what difference is it? A company's worth $400 billion or $600 billion. What's the difference? Well, that's used to be a big difference for guys like you and me. I guess it's not anymore. I mean,
it's just a story. Yeah. I mean, if you got a story, then you're golden. You don't, I mean, the earnings. And, you know, if you don't have a story and you're in the gutter, then you're going to remain in the gutter. I'll tell you, and I don't want to be, you know, I mean, I know I just said some positive things in market, but I want to keep it balanced here.
Yeah.
And I think you have a recipe, a small recipe for a recession here later in the year. And it's a combination of factors. And if you think I'm really smart, I'm not. I had Blue Putnam on my show. He's a former chief economist at the CME. And he just talked about a trio of events that are going on. I mean, we've only had recessions, I mean, 12% of the time since 1949. So you're really throwing darts at a wall here. But if you look at what's going on, okay, you have slowing job growth, right?
Yep.
You know, continuing claims data. You look at the data, okay? Then you have, and a big part of that is the government, people, you know, cutting jobs in the government. So that's a trend that doesn't seem is going to change, okay? We all know that tariffs and deportations will increase food and energy prices. So that's going to make it harder to cut rates, even as the data is showing a weakening labor market. So, I mean, if we can still get through all that, and if you think if we can keep greasing the pumps and keep pouring more money, it's going to come out the other end, and it's going to come out in higher inflation, it already is.
The assumption that for some reason people still make is that if there's a recession, that the numbers are going to be legit. That we haven't got a legit number out of Washington in 20 years. I mean, if they actually admit to a recession with money pouring into the system and prices going up, can you imagine how bad it would have to be for them to admit to one?
I don't know if we're ever going to get the truth out of there.
Yeah,
you know.
What do you make of one question? I'm going to ask Mike too when you have to take off. What do you make of the little stuff in the labor thing? I don't know if you listen to Friday, but Carl digs through all this stuff, maybe different, but way deeper than anybody on TV. There seems to be a little bit of a trend where even though the hourly earnings are creeping up at a rate at which you'd say is reasonably healthy, the weekly paycheck is either steady or going down. It's like for every raise you give somebody, you're cutting an hour from them.
Mm-hmm. I did not see that statistics. And their money. I mean, if they're buying eggs, then you know that's all they're eating. I mean, that's all you hear about. No, I did not hear Carl talking about.
Because I mean, it's been somewhat of a trend because he digs into some of the more troubling stuff. You look at the headline numbers, you know, things look okay. Of course, January is such a bizarre month. Last year, we lost 400,000 people in the population in January. Well, this year, we found them, 3 million people. So, of course, we got more people working. I don't know where they were, but we found them because January is a big adjustment month. So but if you actually go through the detail and see all these adjustments, you sit there and go, what is this? But at the end of the day,
yeah.
But the, I think, what do you say, one-tenth... Ricky, what the hell did he say? One tenth of an hour difference in less hours worked is the equivalent to 600,000 jobs.
Well, the hardest thing is and we were talking about this on Friday when the jobs number come. I mean, you can't look at the headline number because you don't know what the hell the revisions are going
to
be.
No, it's crazy. So, what is your team going to make it to the? You guys are going to make it to the
tournament. Oh man, we should have started this conversation earlier.
Well, you're not going to talk about the Irish basketball, so we don't talk to them.
No. Big game tonight in Chrysler Center where I will be in my seats. Michigan is tied for second with Michigan State in the Big Ten at 10-2. Purdue is up a half a game. They're at 11-2, so they've played an extra game. They're coming into Chrysler tonight.
Wow.
7 o'clock game. You got to tune in for that.
I will.
And here's the thing. Purdue put a AWS whooping on them when we played them in Lafayette. I can't believe we're 2.5-point favorites. I guess they're going for the home court advantage. But Area 51, you mark that down. That's a combination of Vlad Goldin, a transfer from FAU, and Danny Wolf. Have you seen this guy, Danny Wolf?
No, but I will tonight.
He's 7 feet. He's 7 feet, transferred from Yale. He's just from, I think he's from Lake Forest, Illinois. This guy thinks he's Magic Johnson. He's not Magic Johnson because Magic never turned the ball over as much. But he is a scoring machine. 11 out of 14 new players. Dusty May, you heard it here first. Dusty May, within the next 2 or 3 years, is going to win a title at Michigan, and someone's going to snap him up in the NBA. There's no one I've seen able to identify talent and bring it in and coach it than Dusty May. So I'm bullish.
Obviously.
All right, Chief. All right, take care, bud. All right, go Blue.
You can't say that about our team, can you, Mike? Mike still with us?
Mike still with us.
Mike, you with us? He must have muted himself. He'll pop back on. Anyway, SP Futures up down 16, NASDAQ Futures down 97. I'll just do this real quickly because we'll go to the half hour, we'll do it. But we got gold is down $5, but still 29.28. We've got stocks over in Europe are down a little bit, almost nothing. And over in Asia, Nikkei's up. They're all actually, the Hang Seng gave up everything that was up yesterday, so it's down 227. So nothing much going on there. Do we have Mike or no? Otherwise, it's you.
Yeah, I'm here, Tom.
Okay. So Joel's a little more positive about the Michigan team than we are about the Irish.
Well, I mean, but Joel is definitely a Michigan homer, so just like we're Notre Dame homers, so I don't know what to say about any of that, Tom.
Well, they got some players. We sort of don't.
Yeah, well, and he's right about their coach. That coach is a good coach.
Where'd he come from?
I think he was with some Florida team. I thought maybe he came from Florida, but I might be wrong about that.
Well, Purdue seems to have the where do they get every year? They seem like one or two 7-2 guys that are pretty good. How do they get all those guys?
Well, I guess Matt Painter is a good recruiter, you know.
I'm pretty impressed with Purdue as a university when Kevin talks about him. And actually, I ran into some young lady where I was, and she was going to Purdue. Is it Purdue South Bend or Purdue? Is there Purdue like in Hammond and Purdue Northeast or someplace?
I thought that there is a Purdue in South Bend. I think it's in that complex out by where we stayed in that hotel.
But they have a real serious connection with Kevin's group. I don't know what he was talking about. It was Russell last week. Purdue, and is Purdue a state school, or what is the deal with those guys? Are they? They're sort of a state
school. I think Purdue is a state school, yes.
But they and University of Indiana really work really well with the junior colleges. So it seems like there's much more of a connection there than there is in Illinois. I mean, it's not that Illinois doesn't do it at all, but you don't really see, maybe there is, a real big connection with like the Chicago junior colleges and places like that, just designed to go right into University of Illinois, and Illinois really happy to have them. And Russell claims he has people from Kevin's school all the time in his classes. I mean, I sort of never heard that. We never had that, obviously, in Notre Dame, but IU, Purdue and IU, there's an IU South Bend too, right? I think, or IU Northeast or someplace. Anyway, we're talking about the military, Mike. When you talk about everything is slightly bloated, do you think it's horribly bloated, like everybody's a peacetime general, or do you think it's somewhat still working pretty well?
I think it's working okay, but we definitely have too many general officers. I mean, I think you've talked about it before, and it's in all the people that talk about the bloat of the military. I mean, during World War II, we had like 8 4-star generals or something, and now we have like 50. So they keep establishing commands to justify the positions. So there's just way too many general officers for, well, that's my opinion, but.
Well, what's the other alternative? Everybody's out? I mean, you retire everybody early or what? I mean,
well, do you need an Africa command? Do we still need, you know, a corps in Germany, for instance? You know, maybe we ought to have smaller units deployed throughout the world, and maybe have let's say the Pentagon direct all of that stuff. But, you know, that would be because some guys in the past have called what was called a lily pad approach or a forward operating base. You know, and now, for instance, we could use Gaza as a forward operating base and maybe help straighten that out. So,
well, there's no harbor there. That's a problem, right?
Well, but you could probably build one.
We tried that, didn't we?
Oh, they made a half-assed attempt to put a pier up, and that didn't work. So, but well, Syria, Latakia is a very good port, and it's at that end of the. It's not Gaza though, so I mean that's Syria proper. Syria's up for grabs at this point too.
What's the early read on the guys that are running Syria? Are they going to be, I won't say an ally, but are they going to be okay? Or at least be neutral?
I maybe they'll be neutral, but who knows? That's a good question because I think it. I'm not sure whether he's Sunni based or Shia based. But the odds are they're probably Shia based since that's what the Hezbollah was. So, but he's an offshoot. So I think he's Sunni. And in that part of the world, I'm not sure how well the Sunnis fit in. But, you know, the Palestinians, for instance, are Sunni. And this is where Trump's not being realistic. You know, he seems to think he can move 1.8 million Palestinians into either Jordan or Egypt, and neither one of those countries is going to be satisfied with that.
Well, Jordan's already half refugee now. That guy, I don't know how he doesn't get the peace prize. How does he handle that many people? And it is, you know, there doesn't seem to be revolutions, or everybody seems to be getting fed.
No,
somehow.
That's correct. But they're essentially in camps where they've developed an infrastructure in the camps, and there's plenty of room in there's room in Gaza now, but they've already tried that didn't work. There's room in southern Israel, but the Israelis aren't going to give up space. There's plenty of room in Syria, and there's plenty of room in Egypt. So, but you know, how much are we willing to finance all this?
You know more about. I'm suspecting since you were talking about it, you know more about the topography. I mean, are the Gaza looks to me, of course, who the hell knows what you see on TV. Is there any chance of growing crops and doing anything? I mean, is there a river in Gaza? I mean, Syria, I have to assume there's some areas where you can sustain people. There's going to be some farming or some crops or something. If Syria calmed themselves down, could it be a decent economy? Do they have, I'm going to say trees, but I mean, is there agriculture? I have no idea.
I think that there is some, and I think Syria could be a viable state, as could Lebanon. But, you know, unfortunately, Lebanon is led by the Hezbollah, and Lebanon used to be a very robust society. They used to be the jewel of the Middle East. Beirut was.
Well, now they're on the water, and they've got a couple of decent ports.
Right. And the same thing I think we could do, well, the Israelis were making a lot of progress with Gaza when they essentially owned it and occupied it. And then they turned it all over to the Palestinians, and then Hamas ended up making it a military economy. So that didn't work.
Kevin, of course, fact-checked this and said, Northeast is not Hammond. I meant Northwest. Oops. Northeast would be like Fort. I am Purdue at the wrong side of the state, right at Hammond. I moved Hammond. I moved Hammond like Trump's going to move Gaza.
Right. Well, Trump's not going to move Gaza. He's talking about a real estate development, which...
His company, probably.
Well, that's... It's, well, something that he's affiliated with, I'm sure. His sons will probably be running it. Who knows?
It's... Why do people think that's cool, that the president is doing his own business in the Oval? Whatever. Maybe it's just not our time. People didn't do that in our... I mean, even as bad as Tricky Dick was, you didn't see him running his own hotel out of the Oval Office, for God's sake.
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah, I mean, I wish I knew more about the individual places. I mean, because some of those places obviously were very fertile, and you can get stuff. I don't know. Can Syria feed the population they currently have? I mean, Gaza looks to me like how... What is anybody doing, guys? It looks like there's any jobs anywhere, is there?
Well, they used to have a viable desalinization plant, and they were growing crops there, but that all went by the wayside with the development of Hamas, and it's essentially just it will be a donor state for a while,
Bill Moriarty was not talking on last week. Evidently, the big desalination plant down in Corpus Christi has been. It was supposed to be whenever it was supposed to be ready. They put it off 6 months, a year, or whatever. Bill was saying in 20 years we're probably going to have a lot of desalination along the Texas coast, and they're going to pump a lot of that water inland because the population is growing so much. But he says it's an enormous energy user. Where does Gaza get the energy to run the place?
That's a good question, Tom. I don't know. The Israelis used to furnish all of that stuff. So, and that's the problem with. Everybody keeps talking about AI, and I know I'm shifting on you, but you need an awful lot of power to run AI too. So
currently,
I don't think the need for power is going to go away to do either AI or desalinization or whatever. So, I mean, California's got a problem, but they could do desalinization, but that would ruin some of that coast, and they're concerned about the coast. So,
well, actually, a couple of people, one I was listening to and was paraphrasing, and another was Bill, that they actually get more than enough water yearly in California to do agriculture and people, if it's stored properly. I mean, and most of the time they do that, but this particular time with these fires and stuff, they've had some issues. But is this abnormally dry? I thought Palisades only had a tenth of an inch of rain since May.
Right, they've had a dry season, that's for sure. And the Santa Ana winds are. Those are killer winds when they kick up in the fashion that they do.
Yeah, I don't see how. I mean, for a little bit I've been out there. I mean, everybody, of course, everybody's an expert on everything these days, right? I've also heard 10 people in various libraries I've been in, or bars, or coffee shops. Everybody says, well, you got to do controlled burns. How the hell do you do a controlled burn on a hillside in Hollywood?
I mean, we used to do controlled burns at Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty, and they go out in the woods and they clear some of the ground off and then they burn, and we did that all over North Carolina. As a matter of fact, I burned my lawn one year, and you just have to be careful. You pick the right day.
Now, did you do that on purpose, or did you spill your charcoal?
No, I did that on purpose.
Well, there you go. I've seen guys do it. Actually, some do it out at Audrey's, and they almost lost control of the damn thing. But they do it on a lakeshore here. You know what, Mike? It's a non-windy day. It's perfectly flat. They've got about 8 fire trucks out there, and they're doing maybe an acre or two. And these guys are nervous as hell. I can't imagine doing that on a hill in California.
Right. Well, that would it'd be a lot tougher there. That's for sure.
They get all this rain, they get all this growth, the growth dies, and it's just kindling for the fall, right? I mean,
right, exactly.
I mean, anyway, but I'm going to say, what's weird is that I've been watching these insurance company stocks to the extent that the ones that are public, they're not getting clobbered that much. Are they like not going to pay? Or I mean, a lot of people say that people in Palisades don't have insurance. How the hell do you get a mortgage without insurance?
Well, maybe they had insurance, and then they've let it lapse in the last 3 or 4 years when the rates went way up. You know, I don't know, Tom. That one, you got me on that one, because if I had a house, I would have it insured, you know.
Well, yeah.
But I think some of those people, because the houses got so expensive, they couldn't afford to insure them anymore.
Well, what do you think, I mean, in terms of, like, the places in Florida? I mean, if... As a trader, and somebody always thinks in terms of numbers, which is a bad habit, what's going to happen? Somebody's got a $500,000 house or more, and now it's in some spot where the hurricane's going to come there and get it again, and all of a sudden now the insurance is so high, the person there can't afford it. Is he going to, like, you know, puke the house out to BlackRock at 2.25 and just say, I'm not at that number, I'm not insuring it? I mean, is that the end game?
I that's a good question, Tom. I do not know. You know, that's, I mean, the real estate's going up around here, and but I haven't heard of people that can't afford to, you know, pay their mortgage or their insurance yet, but I'm sure there's some of that around here, but who knows?
Well, I know this area where Audrey lives out, and this is, if you talk to Lou in Denver, it just happens all the time, but and I think it happens in Florida quite a bit. But we don't normally have issues here with the weather. It's where it wrecks stuff. I mean, you'll get a tornado once in a while. But they go right for the trailer parks, right? They pretty much avoid the houses for some reason. But the they had a real big hailstorm a few years ago, and there was another one this year, to the point where all these roofs are damaged. And State Farm, I mean, I'm going to say, in Audrey's, she doesn't really have a subdivision, but in her area, I'm going to say 40-50% of the people had their roofs replaced.
Well, that happened in Cleveland one time too, Tom. There was a bad hailstorm, and I don't know if my sister benefited from it or not, but in her neighborhood, there were a lot of roofs damaged, and roofing companies came in there and made a lot of money, and a lot of people got new roofs.
Yeah, I mean, but these things are not—they're not cheap.
No, that's correct. This was a nice neighborhood, and I mean, probably was $50,000 for every roof, or wow, you know, 25 to 40. I don't know.
Remember when we grew up? You threw another level of asphalt shingles up there. It was about $800. That ship has sailed, huh?
Yeah, it sure has.
I mean, I think the people across the street from what the guy was telling me, what, 95? That's a number.
Yeah, that is a number. How big was the house?
I don't know. Yeah. Pretty big. I mean, not huge. But I mean, you know, yeah. But they put this new stuff on there that's supposed to be able to absorb hail and everything else, and the insurance company loves it because it'll last God knows how long, and whatever. Everybody's happy, I guess.
Yeah, they all want the 50-year shingles. That's what they want.
Yeah, yeah. What, Ricky, let me know when we get Professor Hal.
Professor is in the meeting.
He's in the meeting? Professor Hal, pop in here, bud. What's going on with you?
Oh, not doing too bad.
How close are you to Mike? Mike, you're where? You're Charlottesville?
In Charlottesville, yeah.
Oh, wow, we're up there in Burlington.
Which is, how far
which
away?
Which is about equidistant between Durham and Greensboro.
Okay.
Oh, so I'm probably 4 or 5 hours from them. I'm not sure.
Oh, so you're way north. You're way north.
Yeah, yeah.
We're about probably 20 miles from the Virginia border. I would think, as a crow flies.
Well, then it might
if the crow were flying due north, we're about 20 miles.
We're probably 4 or 5 hours, and still, I'd say.
Yeah.
All right, well, I mean, one of these days I'm going to have to go through that area. It seems kind of nice.
Oh, you don't know how to leave Chicago, Tom. I don't think you could get out of the Michiana area. Your blood will stop if you leave that area.
Well, I used to go to Arizona all the time. We had clients down there.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, we
well, yeah, but to watch the Cubs, right? Yeah.
To watch the Cubs. You know, where we used to go a real lot when options were a lot younger, and I was doing a lot of teaching for the exchanges and stuff, or for the exchange, CBOE. We'd go to San Francisco a real lot because they were the first people, really, that learned a lot about options because the original tech companies paid people in stock options. So they had a pretty good idea of what options were, and we had a lot of clients from there. And a lot of, we did seminars out there and stuff. Plus, I love the area. Although I don't think I would take my bike over to Golden Gate Bridge again, Mike. That was a little testy. My brother and Dr. J, that was their idea. Of course, then they take off and leave me because my brother's a really good cyclist. I'm going across the thing by myself, and I'm looking down. I was over the friggin' rail, and it's freezing up there, and it's windy. I'm going, what am I doing? Am I trying to kill myself up in these two idiots? But I found a real nice bar in Sausalito, though, and when I pulled up there, and I was okay. About 100 yards from the ferry, and took the ferry back. So there you have it. But anyway, if you're ever out there, you want to do that, I'd say you'll do it once, you'll enjoy it, and then but you won't do it again, probably. Just saying. I don't know where that came into. But San Francisco, I love. So I used to go places, Mike, you know. You're right. Now I go about as far as South Bend. But are you going to the 51st year? Or are you going to do that? Mike, I think Mike maybe signed off. All right, we'll stop talking about another name. Hal, what's
yeah, I think Mike signed off, yeah.
He signed off. Well, it was nice of him to pile on today, and because our buddy Carl is skiing. So anyway, so what's up with you? What's going on with what is going on in Washington in terms of, are we really going to make a difference in any kind of budget? I mean, everybody thinks that we're saving all this money. I don't think we might be saving some, and some of the stuff's a pretty good idea, maybe. We're not going to have a penny anymore. You know, Canada hasn't had a penny in what, 10 years?
Yeah, I'm okay with the penny going by. I mean, the Fed basically destroyed it. I mean, if you know any history, if the audience knows any history, the Fed, when it rolled out, basically over the last 100 years, has turned a dollar into a penny. So I don't think we need the penny anymore.
No. Yeah. No. Actually, in Canada, let me see, I was up there not that long ago, despite what Mike says. Aren't the dollars are coins, right? And the bills are $2.
Aren't they called loonies or something like that? Loonies?
Yeah, but I think the you have a dollar coin. And I think the,
yeah, maybe, yeah. And I think it's called a loony.
Yeah, I thought the $2 bill was the loony. I'm not sure.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Anyway, it's a little different. But
when I was in Lewiston, Idaho, I'm working for my parents, my stepfather, my mom at the Lewiston bus terminal. It was kind of a cool job because we could get a pass to ride the bus, the Greyhound bus, across the United States for really cheap, maybe even free. But anyway, when we ran the bus terminal, I don't know how much Canadian money came through the bus terminal. We were always picking up Canadian quarters and whatnot. And the bank took them as if they were American quarters. So. But I think that happens more and more as you get closer and closer to the border. We're about 100, I think we're about 120 miles, maybe 150 miles from the border.
It's the $1, it's the $1 gold colored coin.
I think we tried to launch one too called the Sacagawea, but people didn't take to it. I liked it actually. I liked the gold coin.
I actually have a roll of Susan B. Anthony silver dollars that I've never used because they're the only cash that the parking meters take.
I thought people would, when it came out, I thought people would buy into the Sacagawea coin. I really liked it. I thought it was cool looking.
Well, you almost can't tell it from a quarter, same size.
Yeah, I know. I think that's one of the problems.
The reason why they call it a loony is it's got a loon on it.
Yeah, when you get them today, it's like when you go to McDonald's and you want to get a $1.50 coffee or something, you always kind of wonder if they're going to think it's a quarter, right? And then it's an issue, right?
Well, first of all, if you're getting your coffee at $1.50 at McDonald's, you must be an employee.
No. Every drink at McDonald's, I think it's a dollar still.
No,
it's $1.50 now. It used to be every drink, like coffee to soda, was a dollar, but now it's $1.50.
I think you're before COVID with that.
Outside of like Chicago and New York, you can get.
Last time I was at McDonald's, I caught a large coffee was $2.79.
Well, outside of Chicago, you got to get outside of Chicago again, Tom.
All right. Well, Dunkin' Donuts is like what, $4.20, Ricky?
Yeah, but I think at McDonald's, still to this day, you can get any size soda and then a drip coffee. Not their Frappuccino or their Frappuccino substitute, but like a drip coffee, any size, and then any size soda for like $1.50 now.
All right, well. Yeah. Maybe it's worth the trip.
Oh, yeah, I go there every morning. When I drop, if I have to drop Joe off at school, I'll go into McDonald's and I'll look at a bunch of stories and read them, or I'll listen to my audiobook that I'm listening to now, and I'll tweet some stuff, and I'll drink my coffee. And it's kind of cool because there are these old veterans in there. I mean, this is North Carolina, right? So you have these old veterans in there, and sometimes I wear my Navy hat, you know, it just says Navy across the top. And I get into some interesting conversations with these old guys.
It's fun. You're a little bit of a conspiracy dude, but not that much. We have a guy.
Let's just say this. I'm not a conspiracy dude. It's just I recognize the fact that the government lies, and it just lies about everything.
Well, I'm going to try and...
You were talking about this earlier, Tom, you and your earlier guest. You can't trust anything that the statisticians say it, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, or the inflation number that comes out. You can't.
Hell, I don't want to have Ricky start, you know, doing Andy and Mayberry songs on me here, but when I used to do the CPI stuff for Pullman, the thought never crossed anybody's mind that the CPI wasn't straight.
Yeah.
It pretty much matched up with your experiences. The only thing I would say different about it was that it had a lag factor to it, and I couldn't figure out where the lag factor came from. But
probably from the way it's constructed, right?
Because, I mean, we really didn't have, and that's why I'm not the biggest fan of Volcker like most people are. I think he should have recognized that. He kept pounding on the money supply and the economy probably 4 months when there really was no inflation, even though it was coming through on the numbers.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think
I think the delay comes in from the fact that they used to use these longer intervals to adjust the quantities that are in the basket.
But I watch, I do what the government tells me not to do. I watch the money supply, at least the crappy numbers they give us now in arrears. And if you look
at, behind you.
But it almost started like last July. If you look like last July, you look at the U.S. is all of a sudden starting to percolate up. They were keeping it riding a herd on it. It actually came down a little bit for a while after a huge bulge in COVID. But now it's percolating back up. Really, it almost...
Yeah, it's grown it's not grown geometrically. It's grown parabolically.
I've got it roughly at about a 5.96% annual rate since July, which is certainly not fighting inflation. I'm sorry. I mean, it just isn't. But the weird part, this is the question I put on your what do you call the aluminum foil hat here. If you look at the British number, the European Central Bank number, it's almost exactly the same, all starting in July.
It's almost like they're talking to each other, including.
That's what I'm saying. That can't be random.
Yeah.
They just said, I think that they believe, and you know what, maybe rightfully so with the thing that they've created. Hell, I think if you put an electric prod on somebody's private parts, they're going to tell you right now that they are much more afraid of the asset bubble collapsing than they are inflation getting higher.
Well, I think they're worried about their currencies being stripped of their power. So I think the COVID was the Fed injected all kinds of liquidity throughout the world. They're the ones that I think bailed out the Libyan Central Bank right before Gaddafi was taken out. So I think they're just worried about maintaining their monopoly in currency. Honestly.
Well, do you actually think that they give a rat's behind over, now if there's a blanket huge inflation where representatives start getting thrown out, but it doesn't seem to matter now since all we have is an executive branch, it appears. Do you actually think that they give a crap whether you and I can afford our transmission in the car or eggs this week? Rather than the multi-gazillionaires keeping the stock price where they are.
Well, yeah, the government bureaucrats with their bloated salaries and people at the Fed with their bloated salaries and people who are reading the news, teleprompters that look really pretty and have six-pack abs, all them think everything's great. It's just everybody else that is just struggling.
Maybe if we look good and had six-pack abs, that could be us.
Yeah, you know, I tried having six-pack abs in the 1990s. It just didn't work out too well.
They were in there somewhere.
Well, you know, in the Navy, on the Navy ship, I mean, this is how bad it was on the Navy ship. If they would have randomly drug tested our ship, I think we would have lost half the crew, for one, right? So they didn't randomly drug test the entire ship. They randomly drug tested like 20 people, right? And then on top of that, they would cut us loose at 10 o'clock in the morning to go. And this is when we're in port, which is very rare, right? So they cut us loose to go exercise. Well, some of my friends in the Navy, we'd go exercise by doing 12-ounce curls.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I could still get through that run in just under the maximum allowable time.
What run did you guys have to do?
We had to do, man, it's been a while. I think we had to do like a 2-mile run. And when you're in your 20s and you can eat a whole pizza without, you know, gaining weight, and
oh yeah,
you can do a 2-mile run. You can squeeze that out, man, in your 20s. I couldn't do it today, but back then, without running at all, I could get a 2-mile run in under, I think, the time limit of like 13 minutes or something like that. I think it was like 13 minutes.
Well, that's pretty quick. 6.5 minute miles.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that was my best time, but I think there's like if you did it over like 20 minutes or something, you had to do mandatory PT, which was supervised PT. But I was always able, no matter how bad a shape I was in my 20s, I was always able to get just under the threshold that required me to do mandatory PT.
Oh, God. I used to run my...
But you can do that in your 20s, man. You can do that in your 20s.
My pace when I ran, I used to run, you know, at a few 10Ks and stuff. I was weird. I had one pace that I couldn't really go much faster or much slower. Going slower maybe pissed me off as bad as going faster. It was like 7.5.
Oh, so that's not bad.
Well, I did a 10-mile race in an hour and 15.
That's good, yeah. Well, my favorite event in track and field was the 400 and the 800. I loved kind of like keeping the pace.
Oh, you didn't see him anywhere near track and field. I couldn't do any of that stuff.
Oh, man, I loved keeping that pace with, you know, the guy that thought he was going to win it and then just kick it in. That I love kicking it in that last turn. Oh, that was so much fun.
Oh, God.
I don't know what it is, but that last turn was just awesome.
When it's all said and done on what's going on, I mean, getting a little the bloat out of Washington, I think, you know, a lot of it's overdue. But the thing that, I mean, as you work its way through, I started talking about it with Mike, we got another topic. But the one that I'm somewhat familiar with, because I pretty much have covered it ever since it started, is this Consumer Protection Bureau.
Yeah.
And they were brought in because the banks were running roughshod over everybody. And there was no regulation.
Well,
they're allowed to get too big.
The reason why banks were running roughshod over, you know, consumers is because, you know, they're a cartelized industry.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Monopoly doesn't have to care about the quality of service they provide to people, consumers.
Well, and the people were supposed to be regulating them weren't. So they started this new agency, which is not my style.
In a market system, in a truly free market system, you don't need these agencies because consumers will figure out who is ripping them off, and they'll just fire them. And
this is what you and I
immediately turn to a different supplier.
But this is what you and I don't say we argue about, but there's always a conflict. And once you let something not be competitive, then you have to almost be a referee on how bad can they treat people. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, did you see that video of that family of three on the airplane?
No.
I mean, the airline industry is highly cartelized, right? It's highly cartelized.
Oh, yeah.
And because of that, they can treat people just like garbage. They told this family of three with a baby sleeping that they have to get off the plane because they need to put like three flight attendants in their seats. Now, in a perfectly competitive market, there is no way that a firm in such a market would treat customers that way. There's just no way. But they can because they're a cartelized industry. They own, even though you paid for the seat, you don't own the seat. You don't own that seat temporarily. It is the airline seat, and they can do whatever they want with it, and they can treat you as poorly as they want. I was just outraged by it. It was just crazy.
Well,
that
I think that
allowed to do that.
They're a rule. Of course, a rule that's not enforced, is it still a rule? I don't know what that even means. I do believe that there's supposed to be a limit on how much deposits the country's deposit one bank can have.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, oh God, I should have looked this up before I started outpining here. I think it's like 8 or 9%. It's like 8 or 9%.
Companies or countries?
Of how much of the U.S. deposits one bank can have, and I think it's like 8% or 9% or something. Well, I think Bank of America has been over it forever. Mm-hmm. I think Wells Fargo's over. If you let them get bigger than you ever dreamed you were going to let anybody get big. Now this is weird because in Illinois was the you probably know this, but Illinois was the last state in the country to allow branch banking. So you only had one location per bank. So there's all kinds of banks still in Illinois. So where we sit down here by the Board of Trade and so forth, I could probably name you five banks within 1,000 yards, which other parts of the country don't have, right? Yeah. So I mean, if you're out west, you're Bank of America or you're Wells Fargo, right? Pretty much. So if you're in Illinois, you don't really see this so much, but all these banks now are way bigger than they're supposed to be. Okay, so if you're going to let that happen, you sort of have to ride herd on them when they start doing dirty tricks to people because there isn't any competition, right?
Yeah. Well, isn't that what the Federal Reserve is supposed to do?
Well, that was my point when this consumer protection, instead of holding the federal, no, actually, I think, boy, this is going back a ways. I think your major money center banks, the Bank of America's of the world, they are actually regulated by the Comptroller of Currency. Your other national banks are regulated by the Fed, and I believe anybody under that is regulated by the FDIC and the state regulators. It's a state chartered bank. But the FDIC still has rights and privileges in a
this
state
This is
bank.
What Hayek was pointing out. Whenever government adopts an intervention to fix a problem, there are usually consequences. And I always explain this with a very simple example. When government imposes some intervention to fix somebody's life, and maybe they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. It's going to have consequences. Suppose there's two consequences. Now you have these two consequences. Now you have to fix those two consequences with another layer of intervention. And that new layer of intervention causes four consequences. And so you can see how this grows. And that's the problem with all this regulation. When people talk about, it was caused by deregulation. No, it was caused by layers and layers of regulations and erasing the last layer that was put down. That's what deregulation is. Deregulation is not free market capitalism. Deregulation is erasing a regulation at the end of layers and layers of regulation.
Well, that's my point. No? So yeah. Now Trump is getting rid of this group that, in my mind, were always somewhat duplicative. Okay,
yeah.
You should have held the other guy's feet to the fire and say, do your friggin' job. You know, that's what maybe would have been your or my style. But now you have them. And they actually have some cases where they've prosecuted over the last 10 years or whatever, and they've actually gone to some of these banks and had them straighten some things out. Now, it's still not as good as if banking system was competitive. You and I think, totally agree on that. But now, all right, we're getting rid of all these people. They don't work very hard. They're government employees. Screw them. We're fired. You know, and everybody's cheering the guy. Well, okay, now who's going to do what they were there to do in the first place? I don't see him turning around to the Fed, the Comptroller of Currency, and having the discussion you and I are having on some sort of an intellectual level. I'd rather see the president come out and say, the reason why we think we can get rid of this agency is because it's duplicative with these other guys, and I'm going to make sure the other guys do their job. I don't see anything like that, any sort of an intellectual...
But here's the irony of the whole thing, Tom. A hospital that doesn't want to compete against an entrepreneur setting up a new hospital across the street in a state that has such laws, they're called con laws, that incumbent hospital can issue a competitor's veto, and their argument is the services that are going to be supplied by the entrepreneur building a hospital across the street are duplicative. But government is in the business of duplicative services, right? So maybe we can get rid of a lot of this duplication.
You still have the original problem. The banks are too big. There's no competitive stuff. They're going to be able to run roughshod over people as they have. And now, And now you got rid of an agency whose job was to at least attempt to combat that a little bit. Okay, now, you still have problem one that you had 10 years ago when you put these guys there. Does that mean you're going to goose the hell out of the Federal Reserve and make them do it? I haven't heard of the comptroller currency doing anything in 20 years.
My solution to the whole banking system is to get rid of the state that it's in constantly. Banks are in a constant state of bankruptcy, right? Because why? They take a deposit and they lend all the money out, right? They lend all the money out. So if there's a bank run, they're in trouble. And now today, the Fed has set reserve requirements at zero. I mean, there are like de facto reserve requirements with the capital requirements that they have set. But for the most part, a deposit's made and they lend all the money out. And then think about how a mortgage is secured, right? A bank will make a mortgage and then immediately sell it. Or maybe they have to wait 60 days.
Yeah, they wait till
it's like a VA loan.
What did Nancy say? They wait till they're like, they wait till it's performing, one or two payments.
Yeah. And then they offload it, right?
Yep.
But how do they secure it, though? Right? They make the loan out of deposits. They're making a 30-year mortgage.
Yeah, but you also have an appraisal. You got a piece of property. You think it's worth it.
Yeah. So they have basically it's a security with a 30-year maturity. And where do they get the money to finance that? They get it out of a callable loan, savings, checking, right? Talk about messed up.
Well, they have a lot of 5-year CDs and 3-year CDs.
Well, I know, but for the most part, it's coming out of savings and checking, right? My thing is get rid of Freddie, get rid of Fannie, get rid of all this government stuff and just tell banks, look, if you want to make a 30-year million-dollar loan, you have to issue $30 million paper. Now, if you want to sell it, that's fine. But you have to issue $30 million. You have to issue million-dollar CD that with a maturity of 30 years. That's how you secure it. I think it'd be much more safe. So banks turn into warehouses instead of what they are. Perpetually bankrupt. That need FDIC.
Well,
I
think they're doing incredibly well. They're not bankrupt. Look at the money these people make to work there.
Well, no, what I'm saying is they're doing incredibly well because the Federal Reserve provides them loans anytime they don't have the money to cover withdrawals.
I think those guys. I mean the flaw in the ointment.
The fact that they're perpetually bankrupt. If there's a run on a bank, look at Silicon Valley Bank, right? That's what the banking system is every day, and it's protected by FDIC.
I think the
backstop by the Fed.
The issue with their balance sheet has to do with government notes, right?
If they want to issue a 30-year mortgage, and they had to issue a 30-year CD or time deposit, whatever you want to call it, and they securitized a mortgage, a 30-year mortgage with a 30-year CD, I guarantee you it would be a better running.
But they essentially do that.
I don't think they
do
that.
Banks are – home mortgages are not where banks – that's a very minuscule amount of their risk is home mortgages.
All I'm saying is a loan that matures in 10 years should be backed up by – 10-year paper.
Well, it is at Fannie and Freddie.
Yeah, but Freddie and Fannie are these pseudo-government agencies that are backstopped by the federal government.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they sell these anymore. My stepfather bought, this is back when mortgage rates were higher, he bought a, did they do this for the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines? Did they do this for, I think it was a VA thing, but he bought into a package of loans that the government sold.
Yeah.
And the weird part on that was, he says, yeah, I bought into this thing, and it's these are all like, you know, he was older at the time, and the thing was that I think they were all, my brother knows more because he was doing the stuff. I'm going to say they were 30-year loans, maybe 25-year loans. And he bought into this thing, and he had a package, and every month his interest was supposed to be, say, $400. But he would get this check, $460, $480, because every time somebody refinanced and paid off the mortgage, the package must have had, I'm going to say, 5,000 mortgages in it, or maybe not that many. Everybody that they sold in one, I use the word tranche, but every time there was a somebody paid it earlier, so finally, he thought he was going to be making 10% for 30 years, but at the end of like 3 years, even though he'd been getting all his money back quicker, all of a sudden the $400 interest became $200, became $100 because there weren't many loans left. And finally, I think that when he died, it was like 16 years ago, 17 years. I think the next check was for, I don't know, 80 cents or something was the last loan finally got. But they sold it to people. I think you could probably still buy those things.
All I'm saying, Tom, is if a bank makes $1 million in loans for 10 years or $1 million in loans for 20 years, then it should issue paper in the equal amount of the principal at the same maturities. And if the banks were forced to do that, then savers would get better savings rates.
I think one has nothing to do with the other, and they pay people as little as they possibly can.
Well, they do because the Federal Reserve has cartelized the industry and allows them to do that.
This is back a ways. I think I did a thing from 2010 to 2020, whenever, 2008 maybe it was, and from when the rates had gone down from something like 4 or 5% down to 1 or 0, and credit card rates had gone up the whole time.
Yeah.
So that's the issue with these guys.
Well, that's because
they're not competitive. They're not competitive.
But yeah, exactly. The industry's cartelized into one big cartel.
But I mean,
right?
The idea that they're charging people 20, 30%. I'm going to say in the last 10 years, credit card rates have gone straight up, even though savings rates have gone straight down.
So, Tom, think about this. Every industry that is cartelized by government rules and regulations, think about it. Public schools. Kids are don't want to go to these public schools. They're truant. But government does what? Instead of providing them with choices, they say, well, you have to go to this public school or we're going to charge you with truancy. Right? There are these truancy laws that force them to go to these schools that they don't want to go to. And then the teachers aren't accountable to
parents. A lot of kids that are truant wouldn't go to any school.
Yeah, but if the money followed the parents' choices, schools would pop up everywhere that would cater to the needs of all these students.
Well, there's a few spots in the city where they have to be teaching how to shoot guns. That's all everybody wants to learn.
Well, that's because we live in this world where these politicians run these cities, and they've done a really crappy job of it. That's the world we observed.
I don't... Well, anyway, let's go to break here. We didn't do break the first time. Let's go to break, come back, and talk about this.
You got to sell some advertising ads, right?
Oh, something. That'd be nice. Why don't your school become a big sponsor? You know, then we'll get ourselves back on a big radio station and stuff.
Well, I think my money would be better spent buying a Super Bowl ad.
God. Some of those, I didn't even know what the company was after they paid all that.
Yeah, I didn't even watch the Super Bowl ads. I just fast-forwarded through them.
Oh, yeah, I love the one with the little horse pushing a keg into the bar.
I didn't see it. I just fast-forwarded.
Oh, no, that one, they brought the Clydesdales back, right?
So they, oh, yeah, I don't even know.
Well, so they head out with this big, huge thing with a million barrels on the thing, and the Clydesdales take off. Well, the guy forgot to tie to one barrel in. So down the barrel goes. And the young Clydesdale, this little guy, he's in the corral. So he says, "Hey, look at that barrel sitting out there." So he jumps over the fence, puts his own and starts shoving it up over this hill and down into the town, and shoves it into the bar where it's supposed to go. And everyone there's cheering him. And he heads back to his corral. He's a cute little guy. Well, he wasn't little. I mean, God, a young Clydesdale is still pretty damn big. Anyway, SP Futures down 20. NASDAQ Futures down 123. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Bull Run Bank, Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 20, NASDAQ Futures down 121. We had a big up day yesterday after a big down day on Friday, so we're kind of going back and forth here a little bit. Individual stocks today, not that much. We got Coke up 241 as they beat on revenue. They had earnings last night. It's a pretty big move for Coke, almost 4%. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 59.3%, FTSE down 1%, call that flat. Kekron up 13.2%, so not much going on over there. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 14%, call that flat. Hang Seng down 227%, it's over 1%. They were up that much yesterday. Shanghai was up a bunch yesterday. They're down 4% today, but they're not giving up much. So let's say we'll call that one flat. Bonds, 4.54%, and the 10-year up 4 basis points. The Bund up 5 basis points, 2.41%. Japan up 1 basis point, 1.32%. Oil, which has been, well, actually bouncing up a little bit today. It's 73.60. Had been mired down at the 72 number for about 4 days in a row, but now it's bounced up a little bit. Brent up 134, 77.21. Natural gas up 5 cents, 3.49. Is the weather, I guess, getting colder next week. RBOB up 3 cents, 2.14. Gold, down 19 bucks. It's had this huge rally, but now not today. 29.15, still over 2,900. Silver down 72 cents. That's a big move down, 31.76. Coffee down 15 cents. Copper, I'm sorry, not coffee. Copper down 15 cents, 4.55. Foreign exchange, the dollar 103.21, so back up over the euro is 103.21, so it's back up over, it was under 103 for a while. British pound 123.9, so the dollar was a lot stronger, now it got a little bit weaker, now it's kind of steady, but Powell's talking today, so we'll see what goes on there. Bitcoin up 74 bucks, a slow day for those guys, 97,478. What do you have for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. 24 degrees right now with a high of 25. Breezy this morning, cloudy and colder with a few flurries. Tonight will be low clouds with a low of 24 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 53 degrees right now with a high of 70. Not as warm, but pleasant with sunshine and some clouds. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 48 degrees. Let's go to traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 34 minutes. 52 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 40 minutes. Iman Den Ryan from 95th, 33 minutes. And lastly, 37 minutes for Stevenson from 294 to the Den Ryan. Sports, this Sunday, Eagles are the Super Bowl champions. 40 against 22 for the Chiefs. Today we got the Pistons at Bulls at 7 p.m. and the Grizzlies at Suns at 9 p.m. And lastly, the NHL, we got the 2025 Four Nations face-off this week. Tomorrow we got Canada versus Sweden at 7 p.m. And on Thursday we got USA facing off against Finland at 7 p.m. as well. Back over to you, Chief.
So, hey, I'll get a load of this. One of the listeners, longtime listener, good guy, contacts me yesterday. He says, you know, Chief, you always use this word, purer than Pharaoh's wife, which I learned from guys who were the heads of the SIBO when I was on the board. And, you know, that's the wrong phrase. It's supposed to be purer than Caesar's wife, right? And I said, well, I don't know. I've heard these guys use it, but I will. Sure enough, I pull up purer than Caesar's wife is a phrase that I haven't heard in a while, but it is a phrase. It is a variation of the proverb, Caesar's wife must be above suspicion. It means that people in important positions should avoid any appearance of wrongdoing. We should probably send that to this administration. What do you think?
Well, I think you had to set up this administration and the previous administration.
Yeah, oh yeah, maybe a bunch of them. But anyway, but then of course, so I
members of Congress too.
But I understand that. But now my phrase that I've been using, it's not my phrase, is also correct, or actually both correct. I didn't realize that the phrase purer than Pharaoh's wife refers to Asiya, also known as Isia, the wife of Pharaoh in the Quranic narrative. It's in the Quran, for God's sake. She is celebrated in Islam as a righteous and devout believer who remains steadfast in her faith despite being married to a tyrannical ruler who opposed monotheism. So he opposed Allah. So she remains steadfast both to him and her religion. So both phrases are acceptable.
Yeah.
So there you have it. But I,
well, you have to have horse sense, and horse sense comes from one of the Caesars replaced a member of the Senate with his favorite horse.
Yeah,
I think it was Caligula, right?
Well, there was a guy who had some issues.
Yeah, he replaced a senator with his favorite horse because his favorite horse had more sense.
Is there anything that anybody could think of depraved that guy didn't do?
Yeah. Well, when you're in that position of power, right, and you usurp the Senate, yeah, I can imagine.
Boy, that sounds familiar.
The moral hazards are extremely great.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I hope we don't go that far. But when we talk about this banking, and I think we need to talk a little bit about how the... I mean, I've learned a lot about this since Nancy's coming on the show and the mortgage stuff, and how people get themselves in trouble. And she was the one that says if you go to one of these stores where they say no interest for the first year,
yeah,
that if you don't pay it off, the interest starts from day one. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I thought it started from after the year. It starts from day one.
No, you got it's all retroactive. Yeah, it basically doubles the price.
But is this? I mean, I'm not upset that this Consumer Protection Bureau that I thought was duplicative in the first place, but it's not like there isn't some stuff that needs to be, we need to watch out for people. I can't imagine how, I mean, I know an awful, and you do too, I know an awful lot of people that are Hispanic, a lot that are black. I can't imagine when I have trouble myself talking to the utility company how these people maybe aren't even that good in English, how they don't get screwed royally by these people. And how the idea that we don't have to have somebody watching a monopolist on how they're screwing people, I don't
want
to have...
See, Tom, you want the government to be the watchdog of the monopolies.
But they're the one that gave...
with its rules and regulations.
But they're the ones that gave them the monopoly, so they have some responsibility to see how it's used.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to be very good stewards of
people's
money. Okay,
but who's going to do it? It's like we give the drug company a patent for 17 years. You get to screw everybody for 17 years. Well, somebody has to. Who's the somebody going to be? You, me? How are we going to do it?
Yeah. Well, my solutions, I think they would work.
Well, but nobody's going to do those.
Everybody's been raised in this universe that we know. We're all trapped in this cage. And we think the cage is normal.
We have,
but we're institutionalized like Red and Brooks in Shawshank Redemption.
I'm with you that we have.
We need to be set free of that cage.
You have to meet me halfway on this, please.
Yeah.
I know, and I'm with you 100%, that there are more monopolies than need to be. You know, like drug companies and hospitals and things like that. But I also know you can't have 15 rail lines right next to each other. You know.
Well, you can have two. You can have two running parallel.
How are you going to do that when you built them in 1870?
Well, you can build them today, parallel.
Oh, we're going to go get property.
Also, the railroads have to compete with the highways.
Now they do, yeah.
Yeah, they have to. They have to compete.
Well, but the truckers get subsidized roadways. The railways don't.
Well, yeah, but the railroads are also. You know, they only have to supply minimal level of safety and quality. Just
what are you talking about? If
the
bridge goes down,
just enough to meet those government inspection requirements.
I think a railroad.
And if something bad happens, the owner of the railroad can say, "Well, we met the government inspection standards."
I think if a railroad bridge goes down in somebody's car, you sue their ass like you would anybody else.
Yeah, but the railroad can counter saying, "Hey, we the government inspected it and we passed the inspection."
What I'm saying is there are.
I mean, think about the FAA in the DC airport, Dulles Airport, right? Think about that. What kind of technology they're using? They're using technology from 20 years ago. It looks like an asteroids game. If it was a market system where people had to compete against each other, you would have the most advanced. And if airlines had to pay the full cost of everything, of their safety.
On a theoretical level, the idea of having everything competitive is terrific. But I think it ends at the end of the corridor in the economics building in the University of Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to have competing air traffic controllers in the same room.
Yeah. What I'm saying, though, is if this industry is competitive, if Dulles was truly competing against nearby airports, they'd be competing on quality and safety.
You're not going to have five airports competing. who's going to get all the property? Nobody's going to be living there if you got all these airports.
Well, what I'm saying is they'd have to be. They would be competing against the other airport in D.C. They'd be competing against the Baltimore airport in D.C. But instead, the government has cartelized. The government has cartelized these airports, and they can all just meet the minimum standard of quality and safety. They can have 30-year-old Atari-looking air traffic controlling systems.
But maybe they work.
If Dulles had to compete against BTI, Baltimore's airport, and the other airport in D.C., what's the other airport called? Dulles and Reagan?
But if
they were actually competing against each other, they would adopt the newest and greatest technology and offer the public the greatest safety at lower prices. But we don't have that. We have a cartelized air traffic controlling airport system. The FAA has cartelized these airports into one big monopoly. That's the problem.
Well, should we have five armies too?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is the airports should be competing against each other. And they should be bragging
about
their
airport. How do you compete against somebody who's one airport?
Well, if you're living in the D.C. area and BTI in Baltimore is a higher quality, safer airport with the latest technology, you're probably going to choose to fly out of there instead.
Well, you get to do that now if you like it better.
Well, you can't because they're cartelized into one big monopoly through the FAA.
If you don't have air traffic
all
controllers...
All using the same technology and living and operating under minimal... standards
hell,
set by government.
Hell, all the airports in the whole area in Chicago are controlled by Aurora Center. The people from Midway don't forget about the planes going to O'Hare. Those are all put in their chutes by Aurora Center. There's
but
one place.
The whole industry has been cartelized by federal regulations.
I think a lot of stuff in the industry could definitely be.
If Midway competed against O'Hare,
they do
in a purely competitive market with no government licensing and inspections, Midway would adopt incredible technology.
I think,
and O'Hare would counter that with equally impressive technology.
I think we're saying the same thing, but I think everybody who runs a marathon should drink the right amount of water. You think they need to drink 3 gallons and croak for that? I mean,
well,
there's only so much. I'm saying is every time we agree on this. Every time the government gives somebody a monopoly, be it a utility, be it an army, be it whatever it is, we know that every time there's a monopoly or a cartel, actually Milton Friedman felt that a monopoly was actually better run than a cartel. I don't know if he was right about that, but
a monopoly in a market system can be very well run.
He thinks that they actually would be more. They would actually give out better prices than a cartel.
But a monopoly run in a competitive system not protected by government, it can be well run.
But,
it can.
What you can, I'm saying is, if once you do that, and you know, if you're apostles of competition like we both are, once you do that, you have to be careful of monopoly power. All power corrupts, right? Which we're about to find out at the presidential level, probably. Hopefully not. All power corrupts. So you can't have the railroad line going down there and the farmer say to the guy, "Hey, can I bring my farm to market?" This is before roads, Al. Yeah, how much? Well, I don't know how much you got. you have to once you do that, you have to see where it all plays out.
But you got to remember the state, the federal government, and probably the states themselves. When I say the state, I mean government. The state created these railroad monopolies.
I understand
with
that.
Land grants.
That's right. How are you going to build them?
Well, you know, you allow people to buy property in a market system to put down a railroad.
Except they don't get the
you
money.
You don't just give a political favor to your friend and give them a land grant from Illinois to California. You make them purchase it from the property owners, and the federal government.
The government was the property owner.
The federal government shouldn't be owning all this land. Let's be honest.
Who do you think owned the railroad that went from?
How much of the land east of the Mississippi is owned by the federal government?
Not that much.
Yeah. How much of the land west of Mississippi is owned by the federal government?
A lot, because nobody else wants it.
Yeah, 80% of Utah is owned by the federal government.
And like,
no.
And like 90%
of the federal government. The federal government didn't. What should have happened out west is we have what we have in the 1800s. What we know is cowboys and Indians. You know, the six shooter shootouts in front of saloons. That whole Wild West story that we have, it's a result of land communism. The whole West was one big public space where the cattle barons and the sheep ranchers and the farmers were all using public lands, and they're feuding over the public land. The government should have released that land and let people homestead it. But the problem with the homesteading out West is you need a big piece of property out West where it's drier than it is out East. You can't create a productive farm with 180 acres, which was the homesteading property size east of the Mississippi. West of Mississippi, you probably need a farm minimum 800 acres to be self-sustaining. So when people went out west to homestead, the government gave them too small of a lot. They can't a farm out west back then with that technology can't be self-sustaining when it's only 180 acres. So the fact that the government has monopolized the land west of Mississippi is part of the problem.
I've driven through Arizona and Nevada. You couldn't give me that land, Al.
There are people that would buy it. I'm guarantee you there would be people.
I'm sure there's people that would do, you know, they'd like to own a state themselves. But
think about Vegas, Tom. What was Vegas in the 1930s and 40s? It was a gas station stop. What did people do?
It was the railroad to Hoover Dam.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it was.
It was railroad through there.
That land is about as arid as it gets, and yet Vegas is this oasis.
Well, it's oasis after you built the dam. Before that, it wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
But that is what Vegas is. It's an arid piece of property.
Well, my point is, and we do this all the time. You and I are always arguing the same thing. But when you allow the banks to get bigger than they're supposed to be,
which TARP did, TARP allowed banks to double.
Okay,
their size.
They now that they're that big, you got to watch how bad they're screwing people.
Yeah.
I'd rather not do that. I mean, you're talking to a guy who traded on the trading floor. Where people, it was in everybody's best interest to keep the markets correct. You didn't want people trading at a quarter when somebody was at an eighth. A, it was bad for you because you're the one who was at an eighth and somebody's stealing. And oh, by the way, it was bad for the customers because we'd lose business if that happened all the time. So you didn't need, every time you made a trade.
You were disciplined by the market.
You're disciplined by the market and by the people around you. Every time I wrote down a trade, I didn't need some numbskull.
Well, the people around you are part of the market.
Well, that's right.
Right?
But now, if you go up there, there's all these regulars watching people trade, and now open outcry is not a legitimate trade. This guy's got to go through the system. So you and I can't say I'm quarter bid for the spread, and you say, okay, sold. How many times? 100 times we do it. That's not a trade anymore, because God, how could that possibly be a trade? Why would you take anybody's word for it? Now both of us have to enter in our little machine. And only when the machines get together and slap each other on the ass, then it becomes a trade. Well, that's crazy, right? You and I can't do a trade with it because the regulators say, oh, man, that can't be right. I used to do 300 of them a day on a busy day. They were all – I never screwed anybody. Nobody ever screwed me. Well, a couple times people tried.
Well, because you're disciplined by the market, not by government.
We also know that if you ever reneged on a trade, you'd never make another trade in your life. Nobody
exactly. That was that Kevin Spacey movie that came out after the financial crisis, right?
He was
told by his boss to dump, you know, to sell these mortgage-backed securities at 92 cents on the dollar when they were worth 20 cents on the dollar. And he goes, man, this is going to ruin my career, right? He was disciplined by the market.
Well,
that's
what
we need.
But now you don't have that. Now you couldn't really front-run in those days because if you could get away with it once, but if you two or three times, they knew who they were trading with. Well, today, in this system, all these black holes, nobody knows who you're trading with.
Yeah.
It's much easier to cheat now on inside information than it ever was back then.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so we, like, whenever you do something, there's always something that happens that you didn't want to have happen, right? And you and I are in agreement that once something becomes less competitive, or, you know, competitive by distance. I mean, now, you know, in those days, you had to hang around at the general store in Dodge City, because the next general store was a day away. You couldn't give up a day of work at your farm to go save 40 cents on flour. Well, now you can, right? So in a lot of ways, we've become way more competitive in some areas. But it also means the monopolists are even bigger, because now you get a Walmart in a small town. I don't think until COVID, I don't think these people even realized how I did, and I think you did, when I saw the concentration like in the Home Depots and the people like that. I don't even think they knew how much monopoly power they had, Hal, until all of a sudden they could raise prices.
Well, the funny thing about, you bring up Walmart during the COVID. I remember walking in Walmart all the time in Utah, and they were trying to keep prices down, and because they were trying to
according
keep prices
to who?
Low. Well, I'll explain. This is how I know. They're trying to keep prices down, and on the goods that they're trying to keep the prices down low on, like toilet paper and paper towels, those products were gone. So the market price was a lot higher than what Walmart was selling at. And we know that because those shelves, anytime you see shelves in a grocery store that are empty, it's the grocery store setting a price that's below the market. And that's what happened at a lot of the Walmarts, canned foods. That's how I know that Walmart was keeping prices below market.
They had some supply chain problems too.
Well, they had supply chain issues, but when supply reduces, right, and demand's high, what happens to price? It goes up. They're holding their. There is no shortage if prices are set by demanders and suppliers in a market free of government intervention. When businesses have product flying off the shelf, that just means the price that they're charging is lower than the market price.
We have a different definition of keeping lower prices. I don't doubt that Walmart or Home Depot or somebody tried their best.
Now, Amazon, on the other hand, when I went to Amazon and compared the prices during the pandemic on Amazon versus what I was seeing at Walmart, Amazon seemed to be charging much higher prices than Walmart on, like, canned food goods, like soups. I noticed that during the pandemic.
Well, okay, I think the way those guys are organized, and this is, you know, this is educational, I think, for people.
Yeah.
They're organized as such that when I say they have pricing power, it doesn't mean that I'm accusing Home Depot of not trying to put out a price that people can afford and is competitive. Yeah. But they're going to drive their suppliers as best they can. They are never going to be in a position, never, maybe it's a long time, they're never in a position where they can't pass on what they can't squeeze out of the supplier. In other words, if you have a gas station, there's five gas stations on the block, and all of a sudden one guy gets a load of gas for $3 a gallon, and he puts $3.20 up on the sign, if you and I bought it a week ago at $3.50, we're going to have to go to $3.20 no matter what, because, and now we're actually losing money on it. I don't think that Home Depot or Walmart are ever going to lose money in anything. They're going to run out of something because they told the guy on the toilet paper, you're selling me this at $2 a shot, and we're going to charge $2.50 or $3 or $4. The day the guy can't get it to him anymore because he has a supply chain problem, that's what caused the empty shelf. It's not...
Well, at Home Depot, if they jack up the price, consumers are going to say, nah, I'm not going to do it this month.
It depends. It totally depends, Al. I mean...
Well, if they jack up the price, the consumer's going to go, I'm not going to pull the trigger on that purchase.
If Home Depot is the only place in town,
Home Depot will have a bunch of products sitting on the shelf, and they're not going to be able to move it, so they're going to have to lower the price.
What I'm saying is there's all kinds of different markups on all this stuff. I don't know how well you know retail. I know it a little bit. You can go in there, and they are always going to be competitive on the tile, okay? But if you say to your son, hey, I'm out of... grout, go get some grout. The kid's not going to go to five different stores. That's where the markup is on that kind of stuff. But now in Chicago,
well, he will if it's his money. No, but his dad's money.
He's not
so going
to use $10 worth of gas to save $2 on the grout.
But he will go to five different stores if he's spending his own money.
But he does.
If
he doesn't.
Somebody
he
does, else's money. He won't.
On a point on the smaller stuff, you don't know. You're going to go buy a box of nails. I'm not going to go to four different stores to save 2 cents on the nail.
But this
maybe
sell,
you,
this
maybe sell. Other people would. But I'm, it's not worth my time or the gas, is what I'm saying.
Tom, this sell, this is, I figured this out a long time ago, and this is not in any economics textbook. But X product is supplied on the market, right? Firms want to keep their price as close to list as possible. And what they do is they watch inventory. When inventory is excessive, then they know demand is weak. So they just order fewer next month, or they produce fewer next month. If inventory is really, really low, then they order more product next month, or they produce more next month. And so demand and supply still equate in markets that economists have said are sticky. And that's how, so what they do is they look at inventories. When inventories are high, demand's weak. Don't buy as much of that product. When inventories are really, really low, empty shelves, they know demand's high, so they order more. But that's how most businesses, and that's the problem with demand and supply in the traditional sense that is taught in micro principles classes. Supply is upward sloping. Upward sloping supply ignores this idea that an entrepreneur has to roll the dice, produces X product, because he can sell that X amount of product in a month when it's actually in the store. And in that sense, supply is perfectly inelastic. It's perfectly vertical. And all firms do is they just manage the inventory.
Well, all supply is perfectly vertical on any given day.
Yeah.
But as far out you go in time, it becomes almost elastic. So,
but upward sloping supply curve ignores the time component, in my opinion. And it ignores the time component between the time the decision to make X amount of product and the amount of time
we
it
never
takes
did.
To
whenever
get X
you,
amount of, that X amount of product to the market.
We never did. The economics of supply in Milton Friedman's class was so boring. He had about 50 different graphs up there.
But Tom, this is the problem that we're seeing right now.
Well, we got all kinds of problems, but I mean,
yeah, people are criticizing capitalism.
But
all capitalism is the voluntary exchange of goods and services.
This is not people. Well, if I was in your class, I would. You can't. Don't confuse what we have now with competitive marketplace.
It's not at all.
It's crony capitalism and half the economy. Some of it's competitive. Agriculture is competitive. Oil is competitive.
What goes on is capitalism is just the exchange of ideas, voluntary exchange of ideas, services, and products, right? That's all capitalism is, without any government intervention. Now, those who agitate for government interventions do so because they want the state to do something. They want the state to steal from others to give them. They want the state to use regs and rules to create market barriers that keep their competitors out. Or they want the state to use certificate of need laws, competitors' vetoes, licensing, government contracts, patents to cartelize their industries and protect monopoly prices. Now, when all the above causes inflation and poverty, the agitators shift the blame to the free market and capitalism. And that's what's going on in America today. So we need less of government being.
Well, I wouldn't call. Bro. A lot of people think a guy like Elon Musk, we got a dash here.
Yeah.
Is a brilliant guy in a lot of areas. I mean, I certainly can't argue that. But his Tesla is on the map because of the subsidies. There's nothing to do with nothing him being.
Well, but also Tesla's cars are the longest lasting cars on the market, and that includes both gas powered and electric vehicles.
What are you talking about?
I heard that their cars are lasting 200,000 miles.
I've read stuff from people in Europe that had them day one that said at the end of 8 years. You had to buy a new battery, which is a fortune. And, oh, by the way, the maintenance along the way was just as bad as any other car.
Yeah. Well, I just read this article out that the electric vehicles from Tesla are lasting longer on average than other cars.
The rental companies couldn't wait to sell them
after
3 years or whatever.
But, Tom, the reason why that is because when you're renting a car, you're usually renting it to go from Miami to Florida. You can't rent an electric vehicle for that road trip.
The resale's horrible.
Yeah, but you can't rent an electric vehicle. Your family of
I understand
six.
That, but I'm saying there's you make
electric vehicles in car rental markets are just ridiculous.
You make money in the auto rental business by buying the proper car and being able to sell it after 2 or 3 years.
Well, that is, but the primary purpose of a rental car It's so that a person from New York can get to Florida as quickly as possible. Okay. And you can only do that in a gas park.
I understand it, but for whatever reason, at the end of the 3 years where they sell their cars, they were getting a hose. Nobody wanted them.
But think about this. When you go on a rental car market,
the reason why doesn't matter. They don't care. Yeah, all they know is they can't.
Tom, when you go to rent a car and you want to go from New York to Virginia.
I get all that.
The rental prices are really cheap for electric vehicle, but I don't want to rent it. Because I don't know where the
we're talking about two different things.
Are.
You're talking about renting it. I'm talking about when you go to sell them after 3 years, they couldn't sell them. That's where you lose your dough.
Well, that's because the federal government subsidized purchase of so many of these cars.
Well, whatever.
Anybody that wanted to buy one got it. It's like cash for clunkers.
I'm saying if they were the world's longest lasting car and ones you wanted to have, the insurance companies the people would be scrambling to get them. They weren't.
Yeah, but see, the problem with electric vehicle is that it's great for commuting, and the people that needed it for commuting, they had purchased them already. So all those subsidies that went to help commuters buy an electric vehicle to commute, all those cars were already sold.
All right, now, I would have hoped you would have made a better trader, because if you're in the OEX pit and all of a sudden everybody's buying or everybody's selling, my point of view, I don't care what the reason is. I can't sell them. You're going to try and dissect the news and see if the news is if they should be selling or they should be buying. Who cares?
The government subsidies made everybody that wanted to buy an electric vehicle eventually to buy the vehicles today.
I'm with you 100% on that. But if you and I ran Hertz, we wouldn't give a rat's ass as to what the reasons are. All we know is we needed to sell this car at $50,000. The best we can get is $30,000. What difference does the reasons make?
The best you can rent it is $100,000 when you can rent out a gas-powered car for $150,000.
All right, we got it there. S&P futures down 25. NASDAQ futures down 152. I could see you sitting there trying to dissect the news. Everybody around you is trading.
Well, that's all I do on Twitter.
There you go. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.